it's if Russian troops are just crossing into Belarus now, it's going to take them a while to fully deploy into the country and to get ready. And of course, if they want to wait till the ground freezes, they may have to wait till November. But of course, if a nuclear bombardment is in the cards, that could take place at any time. My guess is, knowing Soviet military doctrine, which is inherited from the Russian Federation, the nuclear strikes and the actual invasion of the forces have to come close together. So my guess is, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks away, perhaps. I would be surprised if nuclear strikes occurred immediately within a week or two, but anything is possible. It's hard to predict.
All right, I've been reading his writings for many years, and he's with us now. Jeff Nyquist is author of Origins of the Fourth World War. He writes for a lot of big publications like the Epoch Times and more. J.R.N. Nyquist, J.R. Nyquist blog, jrnyquist.com. And he joins us for the next 45 minutes to lay out the waterfront of geopolitically what is currently happening. Meanwhile, this is breaking. As we told you days ago, massive Russian troops in Belarus, massing on the border. That's right up by Kiev. So not just an invasion from the east into the west, but now major invasion developments. We're going to get his take on that. Jeff Nyquist, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Alex.
You're really a leading expert. I really respect your research. Where would you like to start?
Well, there's some disturbing points here that I, you know, when I heard the news yesterday that the Russian troops were moving into Belarus, I realized that there were these other markers. For example, on the 23rd of September, the Polish Interior Ministry admitted that they were distributing potassium iodide tablets to their fire departments and emergency services. Finland has done similar things. Then you go to Biden's remarks. Now, always watch people who have access to intelligence and how they regard it. And Biden made a statement that was, I think, very significant. He said that because the Russian forces had suffered failures on the conventional war level, the danger that they would revert to using tactical nuclear weapons was serious. And then we go last week to the remarks that President Zelensky of Ukraine made to a group in Australia, and you'll remember it created a little bit of stir last week. He talked about if Russia's going to do nuclear strikes, that there needs to be preventive or preemptive strikes on those nukes. And then he said, this is something that should be discussed. And everybody was kind of taken aback. What is he talking about? The BBC reached out to Zelensky, and on Friday, they did an interview that they published with him, trying to get him to walk it back. And of course, but what you really have to do when you watch this interview with Zelensky is look at his face, his demeanor. This is a guy who has received very, very frightening news, and it's about nuclear weapons, and he can't talk about it.
No, I agree. He looks like he's dying in the interview. He doesn't look like the arrogant Zelensky of months ago.
Yeah, this is very disturbing. I've never seen a national leader with this demeanor, and he's a man who, you know, as we watch him, he's a famous comedian because he has this great ability to express emotions through his face. And there is no poker face here. And now you have the other data point is Poland. Back when the war started in the first few days, Poland had told its nationals to advise them to leave Belarus. Well, in September, they advised them again. And again, on the 10th, the day before the Russian troops moved into Belarus, this increase of the warning, increase of the alarm and the urgency, together with the potassium iodide, together with Zelensky's face looking like death warmed over, and the president's remarks, we have to realize that there must be intelligence showing the Russians are about to use tactical nuclear weapons. The Russians, their artillery offensive was stopped by the HIMARS. Their tank offensive was stopped in the winter, late winter, by the anti-tank rockets, handheld rockets that were given to the Ukrainians. And now it's their air force and missiles and tactical nukes, or maybe thermobaric warheads, that can only make the breakthrough for their ground forces, because their ground forces aren't better trained now and better led than they were in February, March, April.
And that's why the former head of NATO is warned of Putin using nuclear weapons, because under Russian doctrine, when they're losing, that's the next step.
Yeah. You know, the first thing that Putin did when he came to power in 2000, I think it was like the first or second week, he changed Russia's nuclear doctrine. And he changed it to say that when Russia itself is threatened, when its territory is threatened, first use of nukes is the doctrine. Now, you remember what happened. The Russians just annexed the four southeastern oblasts of Ukraine. And now they are considered by Moscow Russian territory. So because of this, he can then activate that doctrine legally under Russian law.
And explain that. Any attack now on that is an attack on the Russian homeland.
Well, that would be correct, because now Zaporozhye, Kherson, Luhansk, and Donetsk are now considered by Moscow Russian soil.
How do you see this unfolding?
Well, the fact that the Russians are moving troops into Belarus, and we know they've been preparing, you know, this is, some analysts have been telling me that they have been expecting this move, and for 2-3 months now, because there's been evidence, intelligence that civilians can see, that Russia is preparing to renew its double envelopment attack, which, remember, the initial attack, they attacked towards the south, towards Odessa, at the same time they were attacking down on Kiev. That is, they were trying an encirclement of Ukraine to cut it off from the west, to take its capital, to decapitate its leadership. That attack failed back in late winter. And really, a lot of experts didn't expect it to fail. The Ukrainian resistance was much stronger than people expected. Now it looks like they're going to renew the attack, but there has to be a difference. They can't possibly expect to succeed unless they're going to use either large numbers of tactical nuclear weapons or a thermobaric weapon, something, some new kind of ordnance, because...
And massing in Belarus means they're not going to do encirclement now. They're going to try for the capital, or the attempt of Stalin taking over Berlin in 1945. I mean, if they're massing troops there, and of course, for folks who don't know, Kiev is like 60 miles or so from the Belarus border, that this is going to be a main city invasion. Is that where you see this going?
Well, no. In military terms, flanking is the whole idea. You get behind somebody. See, like, in hand-to-hand combat, if someone's behind you, you're in danger because our eyes are on the front and we can't see the danger. We might hear it, but we are not defensible from behind. Now, armies and countries have the same problem for different reason, because their supply lines, their logistics are behind them. You get an army behind your front, they're disrupting your
communications. Well, exactly. So it's a pincer attack. The Russians are in the east.
Right.
They're in the south. Now they're coming from the north.
Right. They're going to be, and there's a lot of evidence they've got something planned in the Black Sea. And the Ukrainians, a lot of the Ukrainian moves in the south were, I think, to forestall this. And they really, the Ukrainians really concentrated on this in late summer. But the Ukrainians have pushed their attack in what may strategically be the wrong direction, in the east. And the Russians may be fine with that, because the Russians are still thinking of a flanking attack. The most famous flanking battle, double envelopment they call it, was the Battle of Cannae in the Second Punic War, where Hannibal...
Stay right there. And we also know
right. That's
where Napoleon lost the Battle of Waterloo. We're going to lay this out, folks, because what he's saying is dead on. Jeff Nyquist is our guest. The Russians have been massing troops in the north while they've got Ukraine distracted in the south.
The biggest sale of 2022 is now live, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. The InfoWars Store Super Sale is now live. 40 to 50% off. Bare minimum, 40% off. Many of the products, 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. And the most exciting of all these incredible products is X3. All three of the very best types of iodine that are natural and pure, that actually get into your cells, are in X3. The deep earth crystal iodine and two other types to maximize full absorption. This really is the missing link. X3 sold out for a long time, is finally back in stock, available at InfoWarsStore.com or by calling toll free 888-253-3139. Now, it takes a few weeks for this high quality iodine to kick in.
but almost everybody after that feels the effects. It's not just for your immune system, but it's for your energy and so much more. X3 back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com, 50% off. To me, it doesn't matter who started it, who's right or wrong. What matters is if you look at the doctrine of NATO, the United States, and Russia, this is going to nuclear war. That's why Biden said Armageddon's here. It's why the Russians said this isn't a joke. And the more Putin loses, the more he's going to double down. Europe's having its energy cut off. The globals are cutting off our energy. We're being put into a global crisis, the likes of which this planet has never seen. Highly respected geopolitical analyst and author and journalist Jeff Nyquist is our guest, writes for Epoch Times and so many other great publications like WorldNet Daily. He's with us here, and he's explaining that the Russians have mobilized. In fact, the Ukrainians thought the main attack would come from the north at first, but it hasn't. But now it looks like the main Russian force, not just the reserves and less trained units that were put into the east, that was almost a distraction for what's about to happen. So, Jeff, I'm going to try to shut up here and give you the floor to break down how historical this is and how dangerous this is.
Yeah, I'm going to do this illustration for us. Imagine a front line that runs straight like this. On one side is the Ukrainians, one side is the Russians. You start to Ukrainians advance to the east in the middle, and notice what happens to the flanks of the Ukrainians. Then if the Russians attack, they can make a circle. Now in the Battle of Cannae, as I was saying before the break, this was one of the most famous battles in history. And military strategists have been trying, and generals and heads of general staffs have been trying to imitate Hannibal in this Battle of Cannae. What happened is you had two Roman consular army, 60,000 men. They attacked 50,000 troops under Hannibal at Cannae, and they just plowed right into them, and they let them come right in the center. They just fell back in the center, and then they just started doing circle until they had the Romans completely surrounded, and then they pressed them. And the Romans were pressed so tight, they couldn't even raise their sword arms. They were pressed against each other. 60,000 Romans were cut down in one afternoon, one day. You imagine that kind of loss when the population of the world was so much less, and Rome was a city, not a giant continent-sized country. It was a massive disaster, comparable in the slaughter to what the British suffered at the first day of the Battle of the Somme. And this is the kind of strategy the Russians are applying to Ukraine. They tried it in the end of winter, and now they're recasting it. And it's impossible to imagine how they would expect to do it without the use of some special weaponry, nuclear weaponry especially. And we're getting these hints, as I said, from President Biden.
And explain, they herd them all together like a fish in a barrel. Then they've got to use, because they don't have the same targeting the West does, but they do have nuclear weapons, they've got to use really devastating weapons to make those forces capitulate.
Well, it's the devastating weapons to make the breakthrough, because Ukraine, as this, they try to encircle Ukraine, they're going to try to cut south from Belarus to cut the supply lines from the West, to cut off the tracks and the roads, and to cut off Kiev from the rest of the world. Storming a city is not a good idea. I mean, it's a horrible thought, but you could use a thermobaric bombardment on Kiev, nuclear bombardment of Kiev and Lviv, which are the main transit hubs and the main cities in the western and west central Ukraine that are basically supporting the war. And then if you can come up from the south, the Russians do have amphibious forces and they have a fleet in the Black Sea, and they could try to then reestablish a position, amphibious landing around Odessa, and try to then reactivate that southern push. So they have the southern pincer coming from the south, the northern one from Belarus. If they can connect behind Kiev in western Ukraine, if they can connect, that will doom the Ukrainian forces, because it's almost like cutting off a person's airway. Unless Ukraine receives a constant supplies from the western part of the country and from NATO, unless they have those supplies coming to their frontline units will begin to run out of fuel, run out of ammunition, and their morale will take a hit.
How does it feed in here, though? That, I mean, from most analysis I've seen, I tend to agree with, I talked to folks who are over there, the Russians, things aren't going as well as the Russians thought fighting Western high-tech weapons. Are you saying this was always part of the plan, or when do you think Russia's going to invade from the north?
You know, most of the Ukrainian weapons are Soviet-era weapons. The Ukrainian army is largely, its brigades are armed like the Russian units are armed. The difference is the training. The Ukrainians, after the war started in Donetsk back in 2014, the Ukrainians said, look, the first couple of battles, the Ukrainians really suffered heavy casualties. They actually suffered the first battle, a larger battle in Donbas. The Ukrainians suffered a double envelopment in which their forces were annihilated. And the Russians tried to repeat that in another battle, and the Ukrainian forces slipped away. The Ukrainians are used to seeing the Russians make this maneuver. And so the Ukrainians have positioned reserves, and they are watching for this. And what happened in February when this happened, the Ukrainians were quickly able to bring up brigades and protect Kiev's flank. And the Russians dropped paratroopers, if you recall, right behind Kiev to make the encirclement and to go after Kiev and to decapitate the government. That failed. That assault attempted to encircle Kiev failed. Now a much broader encirclement is probably what they will do, not going after a city if they need to take a city out. Again, the terrible thought that a nuclear weapon would be used. And of course, the Russians now, you will notice that they are justifying these things by the attack on their infrastructure, the Nord Stream pipeline, and the attack on the Kerch Strait Bridge. And they could say, look, we're under attack. We need to do this. We need to respond. And they have threatened, you know, attack on the Kerch Strait Bridge was a red line for the Russians.
Sure. So what does a nuclear weapon do? Because it turns the whole world against Russia at that point.
Well, the world may be turned against Russia now. Already. So what do they got to lose? It seems that Mr. Putin and the Kremlin do not have a reverse gear here. It's only to go into higher gear. I mean, people have made this observation. I mean, you would think that Mr. Putin would want to concede something, but instead he just ups the ante by annexing the four territories. In fact, the Ukrainian reaction to the annexation was to pass a law making it illegal for any Ukrainian politician to negotiate away that territory. The Ukrainians are fighting to get it all back. The Russians are fighting to keep it all and to go further, I think. This is something that Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has said, is that, well, you know, if they resist us, we'll take the whole country, you know, basically. And this was, by the way, when Putin made his initial speech before the invasion began in February, he said Ukraine is not a real country. And basically saying it is part of Russia.
So what's the timetable, Jeff Nyquist?
Well, it's if Russian troops are just crossing into Belarus now, it's going to take them a while to fully deploy into the country and to get ready. And of course, if they want to wait till the ground freezes, they may have to wait till November. But of course, if a nuclear bombardment is in the cards, that could take place at any time. My guess is, knowing Soviet military doctrine, which is inherited from the Russian Federation, the nuclear strikes and the actual invasion of the forces have to come close together. So my guess is, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks away, perhaps. I would be surprised if nuclear strikes occurred immediately within a week or two. But anything is possible. It's hard to predict. But
I agree. And Henry Kissinger's not a good guy. But even Henry Kissinger and the Pope are saying we should have a peace deal. That shows you even old-line globalists are really concerned.
Well, Kissinger made it. You know, Kissinger is a political scientist. He has a lot of education. Kissinger made a statement, which I agree with, which is very important to keep in mind. He made this statement back in March. He said, look, the whole Western military systems and political systems based on the idea of deterrence. We talk all kinds of ways to have deterrence, to deter. Well, MAD is an older form of deterrence from the 1960s, but to deter an attack, you make your counterattack terrible enough so that the enemy can't get any advantage from it. So, but what Kissinger said is he said, we have had no discussion. Our strategists, our leaders have never had the discussion, what if deterrence fails? And the danger here is that we haven't thought it through, we haven't discussed it, and we will not know what to do.
And we have a president that literally doesn't know what planet he's on. Jeff Nyquist, our guest, straight ahead, on the verge of nuclear war. Stay with us. Well, I'm really impressed over the years reading Jeff Nyquist's work. I hope we'll come back again soon, join us for a full hour. Hell, maybe a commercial-free tonight, we're going to midnight. But his analysis is dead on, and we are in grave danger right now. You know, I noticed starting last week, our great iodine product, X3, was selling out. I didn't raise the price of it. I kept it 50% off. In fact, during this crisis, the promo code 1776, 1776 at checkout, it's 60% off. We'll sell out probably in a week at current sales rates. It's not going to protect you from nuclear war. Waking up and praying to God and repenting and a peace deal will do that. A few isotopes that protects your thyroid during a nuclear war, but not for the main war. You're going to die from the starvation, the power outages, all the rest of it. We don't sell it because of that. We sell it because of what it does for energy and your immune system, your stamina, your libido. This is the best, all three good types of iodine in one. 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. Promo code 1776. Additional 10% off. Double Patriot points. The same InfoWars mega sale going right now. Vitamineral Fusion back in stock. So much more. We've got several other specials I haven't hit because I've been so incredibly busy. We get a discount on the signed book or unsigned book, also with promo code 1776. And we're going to go until midnight tonight. Got a bunch of big special guests joining us. But going back to Jeff Nyquist, here's the 7.5 billion person question. They always say the billion-dollar question or the $67 trillion question with inflation. But no, this is the 7.5 billion person question, is how do we avert this when it's clearly escalating towards Armageddon?
Well, it's up to Moscow what they do next. They can escalate and continue the war or not. I don't think the Ukrainians, it's emotional with them. They're not going to change their position. The West can't tell Ukraine what to do in this circumstance. They could withdraw support. I don't think there's a political wherewithal on the West to do it, because again, the sympathy in Europe and for Ukraine and the fear of Russia is partly driving this, and from the European end. And of course, the other aspect, the elephant in the room that we haven't discussed, is China and North Korea, both nuclear powers. You know, they just did an exercise, North Korea practicing loading nuclear weapons onto their missiles. You know, China's been in this mobilization, and we had the 57-minute meeting smuggled out, military-civil meeting in Guangdong, smuggled out by people, many of who have been murdered since, about transforming China from normal to war. So China's undergoing a mobilization, transforming ships, getting ships ready. There's tanks in the Chinese ports. It looks like China is ready to join a widened war. And this is really frightening, because I don't think Russia would be pushing this if they didn't have China behind them. In fact, Putin and Xi Jinping met on February 4th in Beijing, just before the Beijing Olympic, on the day the Beijing Olympics started, before this invasion. So I think President Xi of China gave the go-ahead, gave Russia permission to do this. And then they met again in Samarkand a couple weeks back. And again, we see these
That's right. First time Xi Jinping's left in 2 years, he goes to meet with Putin.
Yeah. And of course, right after this meeting, Putin announces this mobilization, this large mobilization, which, by the way, is larger than the stated 300,000. Reports out of Russia and many experts are saying, look, this could be 1.3, 1.2 million men they've tried to mobilize. And however many Russians have fled the border or whatever. You know, I think the Russian defense minister is correct when he says, well, we have 25 million men of military age in Russia. So they have a vast number of men they could call upon. The problem that Russia has, though, is that people don't really want to fight. And so they're trying to motivate them, and the propaganda's turned up. And, you know, they call up 1.2 million men, they only get 600,000. Still, it's a lot of men, and it allows them to equip new armies. And we just don't have any idea how much equipment the Russians have built, what they're sitting on, whether they've even committed their best weapons yet. So there's a lot of unknowns. And of course, their best weapons really are their hypersonic missiles, their nuclear warheads. That's where they've really put all their eggs in that basket. Nuclear war is the kind of war where suddenly the playing field becomes level. And the West, you know, imagine if they used nuclear weapons here in Ukraine to finish the war, what would happen to the markets in the West? Would they cave in? Would we have massive panic here?
I think if one nuke goes off, we have a global depression. I mean, let's talk about that, Jeff Nyquist. What does a limited nuclear war look like? And most analysis shows it would quickly get out of hand.
Yeah, a lot of people, well, that's like war. You know, once you do a war, you're stepping across a barrier psychologically and also in terms of action, in which one thing leads to another, and you're not in control. You know, the idea that people control events, it's easy to control events when you wake up every morning and you have your coffee and you go to the same job. But when suddenly everything is changing and very violent, you lose control very easily.
I agree. Let's talk about the politics inside Russia. You think it's accurate? There's a lot of heat on Putin to be more hardline?
There's heat from the hardliners. Definitely there is. There is also trepidation by many people in Russia because they're afraid that this is going to become nuclear, and they're afraid that their sons are going to go forward and become part of the casualties. I think it's true. Russia probably has suffered 60,000 battlefield deaths and 50 to 60,000 missing and wounded and prisoners. So this is tremendous casualty. If the initial invasion force was between 180 and 200,000, that's almost a third of
the Ukrainians. Make fun of the dead bodies and have pigs eating Russian dead soldiers. That's not getting them points in Russia.
Well, Russia likes to put this propaganda on. Look, both sides, Ukraine and Russia, are going to depict the other side. I mean, you could call this a Soviet civil war because both these countries were Soviet republics.
No, I agree. It's like a Slavic civil war.
Yeah, well, Putin is really trying to put the Soviet Union back together again. Let's be realistic. I mean, when Sergei Shoigu several weeks ago was caught on video saying, first we put the Soviet Union back and then we have peace. And then you had this social media message by Dmitry Medvedev, the former president, talking about restoring the borders of the Soviet Union and how Kazakhstan is massacring Russians and we need to move into Kazakhstan. Look, Russia's neighbors are getting more and more alarmed at this attempt to reestablish the empire, so to speak. And look, everybody in the surrounding countries, so you look at the how Finland is mobilizing, how Sweden and Finland have joined NATO, Poland has reacted to try to make one of the biggest armies in Europe, how they're reacting in Romania. The countries that have experienced a Russian heel on their neck are the most alarmed. They do not want to be under the Russian boot, and they are mobilizing more than anyone. And I think it's a reflection. I mean, Germany and France have been lukewarm in this whole thing, the big countries in Europe. But you look at those countries that have their real neck in at stake, they're really worried and they're really taking steps.
Can we do anything in the West? Because when I look at the emblematic weakness of Obama's third administration, Biden, and I just see the average American going about their business like nothing's happening. It really adds a layer to this, kind of the icing on the cake that spells doom to me.
Well, we have our normalcy bias. Look, I've said for years, we live in a shopping mall regime, and it's all based on economic optimism because the system depends on continuous investment in the future. And if people don't believe those investments are going to pay off, that there is no future in the economic sense, that we're going to be having a war and a war of tremendous destruction, the system is going to economically fail or it's going to change. And that may be what we're going to confront if this becomes a larger war. Remember, when World War I started, many of the markets around the world closed until that war was over. And the same for World War II. World War III, it's going to even be harder on the markets and on investments and anything where that people have money in.
And that's exactly what Klaus Schwab wants, is the Great Reset.
Well, it's very interesting because war is one of those things that allows people who want to create socialism and a new global totalitarian system.
Yeah, war is the health of the state.
Yeah. Right. Well, the function of the state is to protect society. And in that protective function, in an extreme emergency, suddenly the people in charge can use those emergency powers in a way not intended, that is just for security, but to build something new. And this is always a danger, you know, like George
Washington
said.
That's right. War is good for tyranny. Jeff Nyquist, jrnyquist.blog, jrnyquist.com. Join us again soon, sir. Thank you so much, and God bless.
Thank you.
Hour number four, straight ahead. I've got your calls and then Jay Dyer.
You've been encouraging your audience to give you money, right?
Yes, like media, I raise money to stay on air.
And the most recent website you've been encouraging your audience to donate at is 1776coin.com, right?
Well, it's where you can buy silver coins.
Yeah. 1776coin.com is the website, right?
Yes.
It's the fourth coin that we've released in the last year. And I believe the most powerful, the man in the arena coin, Teddy Roosevelt. Citizen of a republic, the man in the arena. There's only 10,000 of this coin in existence in the world. It will never be made again. And it's not just an amazing historic coin. It funds the information war against the globalists. This is something you want to hand down to your grandchildren. This is something you want to own. And as a fundraiser, it is funding the information war against the globalist. Ladies and gentlemen, 10,000 coins are available. They'll sell out very quickly. Please be part of history. And thank you all for your support. You can go to 1776coin.com or you can go to patriotcollectibles.com and secure this coin. There's only 10,000 of this coin in existence and it funds the InfoWar. Man in the Arena coin, Teddy Roosevelt. 1776coin.com.
Anyway, back to this coin. This is what you've been asking your audience to give you money for this week, right?
We actually started making these coins 6 months ago.
But what you're running right now, this week, is you've been talking about this trial. After you segment, you're sending them to 1776coin.com, right?
Yes, that's where we sell the collectible coins for people that want to keep the show on the air.
Okay. And did you tell Brittany Paz about that revenue platform?
We advertise it on air. Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Okay.